Welcome to a winter solstice edition of A Juno Afternoon on Thursday, December 21st, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's good to have you with us today. On the show, we'll talk with cast members of Perseverance Theater's production of Steel Magnolias. We'll get an update on activities at the Canvas. Michael Christensen and Seth Karen will preview the Alaska State Improv Festival's next performance. We'll hear an installment of Curious Juno from Matt Miller about the mysterious pink pond. And Nancy DeCherney will outline the weekend's arts and entertainment happenings with Arts Up. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more right here live and local on A Juno Afternoon, currently 25 degrees here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Trump and Republican lawmakers celebrated the passage of the tax reform bill Wednesday in Washington. The bill includes a measure to open up a section of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska to energy development.
They can celebrate very shortly.
Bernadette Dementev reacted to the news, saying the Gwich'in Nation will not back down from efforts to protect ANWR from oil and gas drilling. Dementev is with the Gwich'in Steering Committee. She says it's the calving grounds for caribou, which is central to her people's diet and culture.
Gwich'in Nation used to migrate with the porcupine caribou herd for over 40,000 years, and we would always fall short from entering the coastal plain because that place is sacred to us. We don't even go there still to this day, and they want to drill for oil in such a sensitive area.
Alaska's congressional delegation joined the president in celebrating the passage of the bill and the ANWR measure, saying it will lead to jobs and economic prosperity. Dementev says the fight is not over as they look into legal options. A Washington tribe and Canadian First Nations are continuing efforts to protect the Northwest from oil and gas transport, pointing to environmental concerns, as Eric Tegedoff reports.
This year, tribes have been at the forefront of opposition against expanding oil and gas transport in the Northwest. They say the latest threat to the environment and their way of life is the Trans Mountain Pipeline through British Columbia, and Houston-based Kinder Morgan got approval from the Canadian government last week to expand it. That would mean Trans Mountain would transport more oil than either the Dakota Access or Keystone XL pipelines and could increase tanker traffic by 7 times in the Strait of Juan de Fuca. Jewel James is with the Sovereignty and Treaty Protection Office for the Lummi Nation.
It's in the form of coal. It's in the form of tar sands oil from the Alberta tar sands. It's Vulcan oil. It's natural gas. All of it is focusing on the Pacific Northwest as the shortest route out of the country.
Extraction projects from the Alberta tar sands to the Bakken Formation in North Dakota use the Northwest as a passageway to Asian markets. James says the Lummi Nation and First Nations in Canada are now considering their next moves to stop expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Native tribes have been on the front lines against the BC pipeline as well as other oil and gas projects that could potentially harm the environment. Yet James feels Native opposition doesn't carry the weight it should in these discussions or in other projects that threaten indigenous land. He says that's been the case for a long time for tribes in the Northwest.
It's the same old story. It's been happening for 200 years for Native Americans. We're still here. We'll continue our battle to exist. We'll continue to assert our rights as nations and as a people.
James says Native American tribes in the United States and the First Nations in Canada aren't alone in their concern for the environment.
Our people need to be able to voice our concern for the quality of life here in the Pacific Northwest. And we need our voices heard, but we also need the voices of everybody else around us. People around us have to stand up and protect the environment their children live in.
I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe's documentary called The Water Protectors was released online Thursday. The film tells the story of the tribe as a leader in the battle to protect the environment. It includes footage in North Dakota at Standing Rock of the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Cheyenne River Sioux Chairman Harold Frazier says the government has failed them, but the American people have not. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe is continuing to fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline with a lawsuit in court. The tribe says the Dakota Access Pipeline is not its only battle. The Keystone XL project is proposed to cross 3 miles from its reservation. The tribe says both threaten water and tribal way of life. The tribe hopes the film will draw attention to its fight against big oil. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, advising us all to protect the circle of life. Help prevent the spread of the flu by getting a flu vaccine each year. Learn more at aaip.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills. With rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on Thursday, December 21st, 2017. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. In the studio with me now are cast members from Steel Magnolias. We have Naomi Prentice, James Sullivan, and Sarah Everett. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. Sarah, if somebody has not seen Steel Magnolias before, doesn't know what the show is about, how would you explain it to them?
Well, if you like to laugh and cry, it's a play really full of warmth and Christmas spirit. We do have a Christmas scene, and it's essentially primarily about an ensemble of six women and their lives that are intertwined in a small Louisianan town. The main plot focuses on a mother and a daughter and their struggles, disagreements, but also the family dynamics of their relationship, but how their lives intertwine in a beauty salon with characters that are really essentially part of the beauty salon in their lives.
So. And you play Annelle?
I play Annelle. She's the beauty salon assistant.
Okay. Naomi, you play Shelby, right? And
yes.
You're from Louisiana.
I am.
Close to where this play is set. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes. Natchitoches, Louisiana is actually the town that it is based off of. We used to have our thespian convention there every year when I was in high school. But we made fun of it. Can I say what it was?
Yes.
We used to call Natchitoches Nasty Toches. So that's the town that it's based off of. And they do have the devils as a mascot there, so very true to the story.
Okay, tell us about Shelby, your character.
Shelby Eatonton. She is an optimist to the core. She tries to find the very best out of every situation. She has this mentality that, life will go on and we should just take it as it comes. And she struggles with a lot of health issues that I think have really shaped the way that she sees the world because she doesn't ever know how much time she has. So it's very valuable to her.
Okay. Was it Robert Harleen who wrote this?
Correct.
Yes.
This script? Naomi, being from that area, do you feel like Robert nailed the characters in this?
Absolutely. Whenever we were first reading it, there were several phrases that stuck out that the ladies were like, what does that mean? And I'd be like, oh my gosh, is that just a Southern phrase? Like, I had no idea because when I was reading it, every single thing in there made perfect sense. And it was, it's very true to the characteristics of Southern women.
Okay. James, we were just talking about your capacity at the theater. The man behind the curtain?
Yeah, what am I doing nowadays? No, I'm doing just a little of everything. I'm not in this one. This is a wonderful play for six women, and no matter how I try to twist Art's arm, he would not put me in Steel Magnolias. Much to my chagrin, but I think people will appreciate that I'm not there. I don't belong in this one. But this is a wonderful play. The Perseverance is glad we got a chance to do this. Scott, we talked a couple of years ago about we want to do a play this time of year because we get a little bored sometimes of the same holiday stories, and we wanted to think, what else could we do this time of year? Something that has a good heart, something that a really nice story, a big heart, still with a lot of comedy in it for our audience members. And just glad we got a chance to do Steel Magnolias this time of year. It's traditionally, it's like Sarah was saying, there is a little reference that talks a little bit because the play takes place during Christmas time, or at least one of the scenes. But it's got a great story in it, and I think it's nice to be able to do it this time of year.
And it goes through the end of the year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
December 31st.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we got shows all this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at 7:30 and a 4 o'clock Sunday matinee. Then we'll have to take a little time off for Christmas, so no show on Monday or Tuesday, and then one more long week of shows Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night at 7:30, and then one last show on the 31st, Sunday at 4. So come on down.
Sounds good. James was mentioning, Sarah, how rich he says the story is. How would you explain that? What was Harling, Robert Harling, really trying to communicate with this play, would you say?
Well, Robert Harling actually wrote this play based on real life, on his real life. Susan Harling was Shelby, and Malin, who plays the mother of Shelby, is or was Robert Harling's mother. So the play is actually structured and based on his real story. And when his sister, Susan Harling, had passed away in a similar way that ends up, I won't give it away, but there is eventually, you know, a very dramatic event that occurs within the story, which happened in real life, and a friend went up to Robert Harling and asked, you know, you're really struggling with this about Susan's death. You should write something. You should do something. And so Robert Harling literally sat down at his typewriter, and in 10 days, he wrote the play Steel Magnolias, and it was performed locally in his small Louisiana town. It went to different Broadway, off-Broadway, later Broadway, and it became such a hit in 1987, 1988, that Hollywood approached him in 1989, and the play was transformed into a screenplay in the film.
He was completely shocked too that this happened, because he wrote it just as a tribute to his sister, just to help his own healing process.
Mm-hmm.
And something really beautiful came out of it, because it did come from a place that was so genuine. And I think that really, the tone of that really is true through the entire show.
Absolutely.
You can tell that these characters are just so loving, and there's such a familial air about all of them. And it really makes you feel like you're there with them in the salon, just gossiping and having a good time.
Mm-hmm. And they're all based on real people that he knew, women that were in Susan's life and his mother's life.
You've sort of answered this already, but what's been the most fulfilling part of this play for you two?
Personally?
Yeah, sure.
I think for me, the name Anel means God has favored me. And in every way, being a part of this production has been exactly that. I've worked in theater a long, long time, 15 years here in Juneau. I've worked with every theater company here in town. I've acted, produced, directed, written. Steel Magnolias is an epitome for me of a big time on the main stage at Perseverance Theater. So it's a very welcome and fun reward, but really God gets all the credit.
How about you, Naomi?
I would say the most fulfilling part, this is the longest run of a show that I've ever done before, and I have grown so much as an artist just because every single night you find something new in the show. And I was really worried, because I was like, man, am I going to get bored doing the same show every night? And none of us have, because there's always new line readings or new ideas that you just never occurred to you before. And a lot of that comes off of the audience's reaction to things. Some things that they laugh at, we're like, whoa, that was funny. Oh, that is pretty funny now that you think about it. And it's such an intimate space. I don't think I've ever felt so connected to an audience before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's see. It's 3:15 right now. You have a show at, what, 7 o'clock tonight?
7:30.
We're ready. On down.
Yeah, what time do you all have to get to the theater and get ready?
About 5:30.
Six.
All right. there's some big hair in this show.
Yeah.
So they need to get there early.
Prep. Yeah.
Things I never have to deal with. But these ladies work very hard getting ready. And it's usually on the hair.
All right. We've been speaking with Sarah Everett, Naomi Prentice, and James Solfin. Thank you all so much. They're all in, well, except for James, Steel Magnolias at Perseverance Theater. See them tonight, 7:30 and through the weekend and next week. And where can we get more information, James?
At ptalaska.org, or call the box office. Come on down. I'm usually picking up, and I'm usually pretty pleasant on the phone.
Okay.
All right.
Anything else any of you'd like to add?
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy
Merry
holidays.
Christmas. Merry Christmas from the cat.
Goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go. Me on my own. Me gotta go. Pull a beer road down the bio. I ain't one the sweetest one. Me on my own. Son of a gun will have his fun on the bio. Jumbo light across his five-seated gumbo. Cause tonight I'm gonna see my machete mio. The guitar, the blue jar, and the gale. Son of a gun will have big fun on the bio. Give it to bartender, the place is buzzing. In both tongues, see fun by the dozen. Pace in style, go hog wild, me oh my oh. Son of a gun will have big fun on the bayou. Jambalaya across his five-seated gumbo. For tonight I'm gonna see my machete mio. The guitar, the brew jar, and Miguel. Son of a gun will have his fun on the bio. Guitar, the brew jar, and Miguel. Son of a gun will have his fun on the bayou.
KTOO is supported by listeners like you and by Breezin, offering a large selection of wine, beer, and spirits for the holidays. The Growler Station at the Lemon Creek Breezin carries rotating draft beers from Alaska and the U.S. Information at breezin.com.
Hello, this is Stephen Pfister, Facility Manager at Centennial Hall, part of the CBJ Parks and Recreation. Centennial Hall, Juneau's Convention Center, located in the heart of downtown's Willoughby District, is an important economic generator in our community, hosting a variety of events with over 80,000 people attending each year. Events include the Alaska Folk Festival, Celebration, and a variety of conventions, conferences, and fundraisers. For more information, call 586-5283 or visit our website at centennialhall.net.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on Thursday, December 21st, about 18 minutes past the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. Joining me in the studio now is Joanne Flora. She is the Fund Development Director at REACH. Welcome to the show, Joanne.
Hey, how are you today? Thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you. I think a lot of us know where REACH is. You're on 3rd and...
3rd and Seward.
Big building right there.
With a beautiful corner window that looks like a circus is taking place. If you have not been to the REACH building to see the Christmas display in the window, you are really missing it. Take the kids, wait till it's dark, and go up the hill and see this thing. Push the buttons, make everything animate. It's fabulous.
Excellent. And the canvas is on the first floor?
Canvas is on the first floor, correct.
Okay, so we know where you are. Where does REACH reach out to in the community?
Oh my gosh, we reach out everywhere. We have community living in Juneau. We also have a shredding business. We have a custodial enterprise, and we operate the 9th Street Cafe in the federal building. We also do ILP, Infant Learning Programs. We assist with FASD testing. We do all kinds of things.
Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder?
Yes, 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 that's exactly right. And we work with everybody from the most minor disabilities clear through to very heavily medically dependent disabilities.
And you're one of the biggest employers in town, is that right?
You know, don't take my word for it, but we're way up there because we employ, I should say in Southeast Alaska, because we're in seven communities. We actually have three locations that we staff, and we serve seven locations, but we have close to 300 people serving close to 400. So that, you know, we'll go up and down throughout the year.
Okay.
But that's a pretty good number.
Yeah, big organization. What are you up to right now?
Well, like everybody else, we're winding up the year, and I wanted to talk a little bit today about the Canvas, because the January-February classes are now open for enrollment, and people who are either members of the Canvas or interested from the community are probably waiting to hear some of this information. So I'd like to just run through some of the classes. We're going to be having a teapots class with Louise Constantada, clothed figure drawing with Avril Veliz, kids beginning wheel throwing, and intermediate ceramics with Alex Botello, one of our most fabulous clay artists. Studio memberships are now available if you want to come in and work independently. So if you have a project that you want to work on and you just don't have the space, get a studio membership, and then you can use us like your own studio.
That's great.
Every other Saturday, there's going to be a drawing group, and please keep in mind that classes to the Canvas make great Christmas presents. And you can schedule classes and get more information at canvasarts.org.
When do they all probably have different starting dates, but when do most of them start, give or take?
Give or take, like around the very beginning of January,
okay.
And they run through February. So if you look at the schedule, you can see the stagger because they don't all run every day.
So just go to the canvas.org?
Canvasarts.org,
okay.
Or you can even link to it from the Reach website. There's
okay.
a link to the Canvas.
All right.
So that's what's going on at the Canvas. And I'd also like to talk a little bit about what's going on with Reach, the agency. We're on our year-end campaign right now. We're trying to raise $5,000 for environmental assistive technology. Those are devices that provide opportunities for people who have disabilities so that they can actively participate in tasks of daily living, the kind of things you and I enjoy doing on our own, like getting out of bed, taking a shower, making breakfast, answering the door. Technology can make homes safer and make people feel more independent and boost their self-confidence.
So EAT, environmentally assistive
environmental
technology.
Assistive technology.
All right.
Yeah. You can just think of it as assistive tech if you want to. But, you know, the key to this is that for people without disabilities, technology can make things easier. Would you agree with that?
Most of the time.
Well,
right?
Most of the time,
yeah.
Right? For people with disabilities, technology makes things possible.
Mm.
You know, things that they may not be able to do otherwise. So we've got a goal. We're trying to raise $5,000 to purchase some technology that we can start to assemble in people's homes and give them that sense of confidence and independence and the ability to do things for themselves safely.
How can people help you raise that money?
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you asked. They can go to reachak.org/giving, and there'll be a link to the donation site. You can also just Google Reach Alaska, and we'll pop up there, too.
And you are a nonprofit, right?
We are a nonprofit. We're your basic 501c3. And, again, we're serving a really wide range of people, literally from infancy throughout life, because the people we serve are developmentally or intellectually disabled. And so we will have people literally throughout their lives working with us and us working with them. And our goal is to remove as many barriers for them as possible. And this technology is one of those things that you get a lot of bang for the buck out of.
Great. And it's probably tax deductible as well, right?
Darn right it is.
Okay.
Yeah. A couple of other things I'd like to mention for 2018, because we're looking a little bit ahead. We have raffle tickets on sale now for our 40th anniversary raffle. We've got Alaska Airlines tickets, a canoe paddle and trek from Alaska Above and Beyond, or Above and Beyond Alaska, and Whale Watching for from Juno Tours and Whale Watch. Raffle tickets make great stocking stuffers, right? So you can give a canvas class as a gift and some raffle tickets in their stockings. Well, that'll be fun. January 27th, the Canvas will have its annual dinner. And when you go to a Canvas dinner, you know, you get a handmade pottery plate and cup that Alex Botello makes. As so you eat your dinner on this beautiful pottery, and then you take it with
and you. Get your plate, too.
Is that cool? February 10th, we're having a Mardi Gras dinner at the St. Anne's Parish Hall, which is a fundraiser for us hosted by the Knights of Columbus, which we're very appreciative for. And then the biggie, April 14th, our 40th anniversary celebration. 40th anniversary.
Wow. Okay.
And that's going to be, and then we're going to draw the raffle at the party. So we'll have more information about that as we get closer. But Reach has some cool things coming up, and we're very excited about 2018.
Yeah, it sounds like it. If people want to see these events and dates, where's the best place to do that?
ReachAK.org. You can also go to our Facebook pages, because I try to post information about these things as they're coming around. Right now you see a lot of information on Facebook about the year-end campaign for the technology that we're trying to purchase. But there'll be more about the raffle and more about the events that are coming up. But the website will have it. On the website on the right-hand side at reachak.org, there's a little news link. And so as things are happening, we're stacking news articles up there. And that's a good place to just see what's going on.
All right, that's Joanne Flora, the Fund Development Director. You just want to say Fund Development,
I know,
right?
I know.
The Fund Development
you know,
Director.
I'm clear about that because we, and at Reach, we also have a Fund Committee. We do, an FUN Fund Committee that arranges some activities and events. And so I like to be clear that even though I like to have a good time, I'm on the fund end of things, and they are the fun end of things.
You both need each other, right?
We do need each other so badly.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Joanne. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just Reach would like to wish everybody a very happy holiday, regardless of the holiday you want to celebrate, and thank the community of Juno for all the support we get throughout the year. We are so grateful to be in a community like this where everybody, the organizations, the individuals, the businesses are just so supportive of what we're trying to do, and we're very, very thankful.
Thank you. Thank you.
gaps, speak your love to me. To me.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, December 21st, winter solstice. It's right at the bottom of the hour. In the studio now is Michael Christensen and Seth Caron. They're part of the Alaska State Improv Festival. And among other things, we're going to be previewing their January 6th performance at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. Welcome to the show, Michael and Seth. It's nice to have you.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
All right. Alaska State Improv Festival. When did this organization begin?
The organization began back in 2003.
Okay.
And we started with bringing in single guest artists from around America, Joe Bernard. And then we built from that to last year, we brought in 98 guest artists.
Mm-hmm.
The festival officially started 5 years ago. This is going to be our sixth year.
And sometimes we think of a festival as like this one event that happens, like the Folk Fest happens in April, but you're a year-round festival, basically, right?
You could definitely say that. It feels like a year-round party, really, whenever we get together. I've only been involved with this now. This will be my, third year? This will be my third year involved with it. And, I'm new to Juneau. I've only been here 3 years. I've only been in Alaska 3 years. And coming here, I didn't know what improv was or how to proceed with it. And then I met up with Mike and the rest of the team, and I've had a blast so far. It's been wild.
Great. So what is improv, Michael?
Improv is, it's theater. It's theater without a script. So we did have a show where we had the first page of a unproduced play by a local playwright, and we would do a cold reading of that, and then we would improvise the rest of the play.
Okay.
And that was our one-act thing, usually unscripted.
Okay. And have you've done scripted work before, too,
no,
right?
No, maybe I have. Yeah, I did. Okay, I did.
I don't know, Michael. Have you?
Have I? apparently, yeah, I did 24-Hour Miracle a couple of times,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
But, yeah, mostly I have... really super poor memory, and so if I'm not making it up right now, there's very little chance that I'm going to remember it. So improv is a perfect fit.
Yeah, and how else would you describe its differences from traditional?
I guess we have props, but not a lot of props. We have lighting. We don't have a lot of set.
Yeah, traditionally improv is more of a, you get on stage and somebody gives a suggestion and you kind of roll from there. Our take on improv is having a set character within sort of a set world, and either the audience or us on stage kind of builds upon it. And the beauty of it is that when we do this, we build upon our own worlds. So we can actually call back to the things that we've done in previous shows and make them a part of our characters. So what the audience gets is a familiar face when they come to an improv show, but still something that's made up on the spot and off the cuff and something that is new and refreshing every time.
So, yeah, thinking about January 6th, you're going to do sort of three different shows that night?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yes.
Right?
Yes, yep.
Maybe exemplify that with one of these, if you would.
Well, the three shows we have are very different. We like mm-hmm. to, we're using the this season to prepare things for the festival as well as trying out new things. And we started out with Inspire Robotics, where we got our prompts from an app. So that was fun. The opening is Early Walker, and that's a duo of little old ladies who are very fun and slightly scary.
That's a way to put it, I guess.
I really, you know, they're part of our troupe, but I really look forward to seeing them every month to see what they're going to do to top what they did last time. It's like, okay, that's as high as I can imagine. Now what? So it's, I think they specialize in kind of bizarre and awkward situations.
They are the masters of improv at its core. I go in there expecting somewhat, you know, some sort of aspect of their show, and then I'm completely and totally wrong. And it has gone a direction I never thought it would go in. And it's just a delight to watch them on stage just take a situation and evolve it and call back to it. It's they're really masters of their art.
Okay, which show will you two participate in?
We are in the group of Cogs and Goggles, which is it's kind of started out as a serial, like a 1950s style radio serial about Victorian era time travelers, and it's developed more into character studies and going more into depth into the characters now. We occasionally have a guest villain, but it used to be that we would start in media res with our lasers out and firing, and now we'll start, you know, talking and going about our daily lives on the airship Victoria, which is also a time machine. So it's evolved over the last 3 years.
It really has. When I first came here, I had some steampunk experience from back east. I'm from New England originally. And when I came to Juneau, I thought, because I had created a steampunk character. Actually, Colonel Tanner is a holdover from New England. And when I came to Juneau, I said, well, it's too bad I won't be able to use any of his skills here. So I just kind of gave up on the character. And then I bumped into a friend of mine, just a producer named Eric. And he said, you know, I kind of want to do a steampunk show. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I have a character for you. And Colonel Tanner was sort of risen from the ashes like a phoenix and came back. So Colonel Tanner's a familiar character to me, and it's great that I can portray him in an improv show and really build upon his character.
All right, so that's two of three shows. And what will be the third one?
The third one is a brand-new show. It is entitled The Society for the Improvement of Mankind in All Its Flaws and Wonders. And it's about we take one person from the audience and we give them the show that they want. And the rest of us
are along for the ride?
Are along for the ride, yes. So it's about specifically tailoring a show to one person's whims.
Okay. And you're doing these every first Saturday?
Yep.
Yes.
At the Gold Town?
Yes. Yep.
We started in October and we'll go through April.
Wow.
And then at the end of April, there'll be the festival, and then possibly we go off to our festivals. I'm sure Early Walker is looking to perform out in America somewhere this year.
Okay.
They're festival ready, and we might. I want to go to Rhode Island at some point.
Oh, Providence is a great place.
Doors open at 9 o'clock? Is that right?
I believe so.
9:15.
Okay.
Doors open at 9, shows at 9:15.
Or the doors open at 9:15, and we start at 9:30.
Yeah.
It's Juneau.
Or
it's
you can come.
There's a 9:15. There's a 15-minute gap between whatever we
come
say.
Come at 8:45 so and knock on the door and look forlorn, and we'll let you in. So.
It sounds like there is some opportunity for audience participation.
Oh, definitely. I'd say in this one, with the society at least. But, you know, I, for one, appreciate an audience that's active and encouraging and applauding and laughing and pointing and gasping and crying and
throwing things at us.
That's the audience I want. So.
All right. So first Saturdays at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater, 9 o'clock. We'll just say nine works.
Yeah.
The Alaska State Improv Festival. I found you guys on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Do you have a website too?
Cogs and Goggles. Facebook at Cogs and Goggles as one word.
Okay.
Yeah, we just have Facebook right now. Stay tuned for a website. Patent pending.
Sounds good. So this is Saturday, January 6th at the Gold Town.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Mike?
Pickles?
They go well in sandwiches.
Yes. Well, I think people aren't eating enough of them.
So this is now turned into a public service announcement for pickles?
Yes.
What do pickles give you?
They help with controlling foot cramps. Yes, it's a cure for foot cramps if you eat many pickles.
So you heard it from Mike, folks. If you have foot cramps, go get dill pickles.
I always have trouble performing when I'm up on stage and get foot cramps and fall to the stage.
Is that why there's that jar of pickles on the side of the stage?
People think it's part of the act, and it's actually, no, it's my foot curling into balls.
Oh, man, I've been eating those pickles just as a snack. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I didn't know they're your medicine.
I need my pickles to get through.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go, folks. You heard it here. Pickles and foot cramps. If it doesn't work, don't write me.
The curtain rises on the scene with someone chanting to be free. The play unfolds before my eyes. This ends the actor who is me. Sleeping hours take us far from traffic, telephones, and beer. Put out your problems with the cat. Escape until the bell you hear. Our reasons are the same, but there's no one we can blame, for there's no.
Are you retired from the state of Alaska? Did you previously participate in the state's SHARE campaign in support of United Way and its partner agencies? Now that you're retired and not able to participate in the SHARE campaign, there's still a way to continue your support of United Way and their partner agencies. Visit UnitedWaySeak.org, click on Donate, and sign up for an automatic monthly contribution. Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. This message brought to you by the United Way.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, December 21st, about 17 minutes until the top of the hour. Many of you listeners may know about Curious Juno. It's the mechanism that you can use to ask any of our reporters here at K2 Public Media about a question you may have, something here in the community that you just don't know about. Well, recently, and by the way, you can do that by going to ktoo.org, click on the Curious Juno button, and submit your question. Recently, somebody asked us about the pink pond. Well, Matt Miller has more.
Ooh, that's ice. I'm on thin ice, really. I'm gingerly stepping on pond ice just off of the Herbert Glacier Trail. Big mistake.
Kids, don't try this at home. I step on the vegetation.
I'm staying along the edge of the pond, but I really don't know how thick the ice is. It's November, just after the first big freeze and snowfall of the year. I'm checking out reports of a pond that looks like it was just visited by French environmental artist Christo. Or maybe somebody dumped a case of Pepto-Bismol in it. What caused the weird pink color? I'm Matt Miller, and welcome to Curious Juno. Listener Bill Johnson sends me some pictures of the pond taken before the snowfall. Listener Karen Hutton also sends me a picture saying the unusual coloration was concentrated more at the back of the pond rather than right by the trail.
The reflection kind of screws things up a little bit because what the texture that you're seeing is from the branches above it. Really, it was just, it looked very wispy, and but like it could have been particulate matter in water.
Local scientists suggest several possibilities for the pink or lavender color, but they say the only way to know for sure is to examine the water under a microscope. Jackie Timothy, Southeast Supervisor for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Habitat Division, told me her colleagues were curious too, but they weren't able to get out and collect any water samples this year. And that's why I was literally risking my life for science. Carrying empty plastic bottles and armed with some ice cracking tools, I head about 3 miles up the trail to find three ponds buried underneath several inches of ice and snow. The water I collected was not pink. Later, I learned that I was at the wrong set of ponds.
There are two benches along this trail.
Right.
You go way past the first bench.
Oh.
You get almost to the second bench, but not quite, but really close. It's the pond on your left.
I also screwed up my role as an amateur scientist. Timothy reminded me that my sampling bottle should have been sterile. Still, I take my light yellow, mostly clear water samples to the Forest Service's Pacific Northwest Research Station in Juneau. Stream ecologist Rick Edwards and entomologist Elizabeth Graham use a microscope to look.
Just looks like normal sort of algal flock with organic matter. I don't even see any
dominant. There's someone moving through.
Oh, yeah?
There's a green guy just swam on by.
All they see is some pond debris, a couple of little bugs commonly known as water boatmen, and a very energetic form of plankton called a copepod. Still, I'm curious, and I ask Edwards what could have caused the pink color shown in the pictures. Maybe a fluorescent marker dye used by hydrologists to track water flow in the area? Edwards says it's unlikely, especially for floodplain ponds, and he'd likely hear about other scientists doing research in the area. Habitat Division's Jackie Timothy also remembered reports of pink water years ago, long before mining exploration even started upstream on the other side of the Herbert River. Edwards refers to Hutton's wispy description as a possible indication of a fungus.
Long filamentous strands of something. And there are several microbes that grow in filaments. And they're, you know, obviously fungi. The hyphal threads are filaments, and that's quite visible under a microscope if it were a fungus.
The coloration could also be from sulfur bacteria that feed on decomposing pond debris and give off a rotten egg smell. Maybe iron bacteria, but Edwards says that's usually found in the sediment and shoreline, not the water column. It also generates more of a rusty orange-red tint. Edwards says the coloration could also be caused by blooms of algae called dinoflagellates. While red tide-like blooms of marine dinoflagellates have been reported, there have been no reports yet of red or pink blooms from freshwater dinoflagellates. It was probably just too late. In addition to making it difficult to find the ponds, Edwards says the snowfall and freezing temperatures likely altered or ended any process that generated the pink color.
If it is a biological explanation, it's a microbe of some sort in all likelihood. That's all controlled by temperature. It's possible that would have turned all that off and they would have died or were flushed out. On the other hand, there are things that grow in quite cool temperatures.
So, the mystery of the pink pond will remain a mystery, at least for another warmer day.
It might pop up again when the ice melts, in which case we got to go out there and get a sample now.
Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
To a Juneau afternoon here on Thursday, December 21st, about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. in the studio now for our weekly edition of Arts Up. Nancy DeCherney, welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you. How are you today?
I am well, and it's solstice.
It's solstice, and it's a beautiful sunny day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gorgeous.
And sun in the forecast, too.
And it's, yeah, a little icy coming across the street here, so drive carefully this evening, people.
And wear your cleats.
Yeah, wear your
for
cleats.
For safety.
Yes. So there's a couple of things you can do today, even in the from 3 to 5:30, there's a holiday open house out at AELMP, so stop in. Homemade cookies, hot cider and cocoa. As I said, drive carefully as you leave work and stop in.
Get to know your power provider.
Yes, and it's, there's going to be a raffle drawing with some prizes. That's going to be great. There's a GSC competitive, pre-competitive tryouts at Diamond Park. It starts at 4:30, ends at 5. That's pretty fast. Must be able to swim 25 yards on stomach and back. No pre-registration required, and there are scholarships available. So there's a phone number on our website, which is at jahc.org. You've already talked about Steel Magnolias.
Mm-hmm.
You got this weekend, and then you got next weekend.
Yep.
Good thing to do with the family that's home for the holidays. And speaking of the holiday, happy holidays, starting at 9:30 tonight. Go to the Hangar Ballroom with your ugliest sweater party. With DJ Quells, there's a $10 cover, and it's a fundraiser for ATIA, which is the Alaska Travel Industry Association. So, you know, actually I secretly like holiday ugly sweaters myself.
I think I won that one year, and that's what I wore that day.
It was just happened to be your favorite sweater.
Yeah.
Exactly. See? Okay. So try it again. On Friday, there's Christmas face painting. I think the kids are out of school, right? Yeah, so things to do. Christmas face painting on Friday from 11 to 5. You can call 500-5000 and get more information on that. I think it's $5. Go to the play. Again, on Saturday, there's at 8 p.m., Jingle Balls at the Rendezvous, a holiday-ish drag show. You need to be 21. It's a cover charge of $11. Also, from 8 to 11 p.m. at Rockwell, there is the Shiver Twins, the Psychotics, and the Tonga Stokers, $5 at the door. And there's a second showing of Jingle Balls at 10 p.m. So there's a few things to do on Saturday night. On Sunday, of course, it's Christmas Eve at 4 p.m. You could go see Steel Magnolias. And holiday, Christmas Day, is observed on Monday the 25th. So I'm sure there's a lot of things you're doing with your family and friends. It's probably good. Maybe ice skating, do you think?
I wonder.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how cold it is out there, but be careful when you do that, too. On Tuesday, there's a level one avalanche course at Eagle Crest, so be careful. Go there. 7 to 8 p.m. at Marie Drake Planetarium, a mixture of science and humor. Learn how aliens and astronauts celebrate Christmas in space. And it's followed by the Starts Tonight on the Spitz Projections, free to all ages.
What's the title of that again?
I don't know. It's called The Starts Tonight on the Spitz Projections.
And the aliens part?
It's all alien to me. But, you know, the Marie Drake Planetarium has some cool programming down there, and it's something. If you've not been, it's a sort of a funny little treasure that we have in Juneau. So go on down and find out about that. So that gets us through the week, and I'm pretty sure everybody's got holiday plans with friends, and if you don't, there's probably places you can find. Now, we have at the Arts Council, the gift wrapping station is up, and we will have that up through Christmas Eve at 3 o'clock. So if you're having last-minute panic attacks, you can come down there. We've got
Sunday.
That's yes,
Sunday,
Christmas
right?
Eve. Yeah, Christmas Eve. I happen to come from
Arts
a family
working on the weekend for the community. Nancy, wow.
Well, I happen to come from a family where my father would do his shopping on Christmas Eve, and I think there may be other people like that. So, do come down. We also have a mini golf hole up, so you can just wander in and play with that. There's the corn holes up. There's indoor seating in case you want to have lunch at Puckers. So we got a few things going on over there. But, you know, mostly I think it's a good time to just take a deep breath and enjoy your friends and families, listen to music, go outside, get some of this sunshine. Oh, my gosh.
You heard it here from Nancy DeCherney. For more information, where should people go?
JAHC.org or KTOO.org. Happy
Thank
holidays.
Thank you. You too. Thanks, Nancy.
You maybe wouldn't think it, but the chicken is an extremely well-connected bird. I'm Mary McCann. This is Bird Note, and this is an exotic red jungle fowl. The red jungle fowl is the ancestor of this, a Rhode Island red rooster, or Araucana, to use its proper title, king of the hill in the chicken world. With each new day, a new opportunity to assert his dominance. From DNA analysis, scientists postulate that chickens were first domesticated from jungle fowl in India some 5,000 years ago. Traders and travelers then carried them far and wide to Asia Minor, Africa, and Europe. Julius Caesar is said to have noted that the Britons kept them for pleasure, but not for the table. The farming of chickens for their meat and eggs developed later, until today, when the chicken is probably the most numerous avian species in the world. You won't find a rooster on next year's Bird Note calendar, but you will find a host of other beautiful birds. More at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
You too can look like a king or queen in this year's fabulous KTOO hooded sweatshirt. Due to popular demand, we are now selling them at our front desk. Check out the logo design by Marms and Meeks on our website, then swing by the station during regular business hours to purchase your KTOO branded hoodie.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. Tomorrow, we won't have a Juno Afternoon. Instead, we'll be listening to a special holiday edition of Writer's Showcase. So tune in for that. And take a look at the weather. The forecast for tonight calls for clear skies with a low around 27. Tomorrow, Friday, sunny with a high near 32. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 30. Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 35. And on Monday, partly sunny with a high near 34. And it looks like we might get to a chance of snow by Tuesday night. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.